Welcome to the Sober Cafe podcast. My name is Gracie Vandiver, and I'm the producer and host of our show. The Sober Cafe podcast is proud to bring you the latest music and interviews with musicians, authors, actors, and artists in recovery. Today's episode is sponsored by Sunlight of the Spirit Music. Sunlight of the Spirit Music specializes in offering CDs from artists in recovery, and they have the largest selection of 12-step and recovery CDs available anywhere on the planet. If you would like to learn more about Sunlight of the Spirit Music, please visit sunlightofthespirit.com. The podcast you're about to hear was recorded on November 4th, 2008. I had the pleasure of speaking with Robin Richardson, who was visiting Nashville from Boulder, Colorado. Robin has many facets to her music and her recovery, and we talked about them and her healing process. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Gracie.
See, you're a psychotherapist and a massage therapist, and I understand your trip here had to do with some additional training. Is that right?
Yeah, I took a course, a four-day course in cranial sacral therapy, which is a therapy that works with your central nervous system and regulating that. And they've shown that it works great for trauma and for anxiety disorders and also a lot of head injuries and things like that.
We're really glad that you made time to meet with us. I love being able to interview artists that are in recovery and share their story, because it's really important for us to hear people tell our story so we can relate to the feelings and get out of our own heads and thinking that we're special. Let's talk about your recovery before we talk about the music. When did you start the recovery process?
You know, I hit a bottom, and my first bottom was with my eating disorder. And I'd had an eating disorder from the time I was about 12 on up to 24. And by the time I hit my bottom, I had been severely bulimic and just really non-functional. And I realized that I was going to die. And so I ended up kind of surrendering and asking for help. And that's when I first started going to a 12-step program. And the recovery process started there. It's taken me a long time. I'm 45, and it's taken me a while to really understand what was going on behind all that. And I had several other addictions that happened that I've had to hit bottoms with and get recovery for also.
On your eating disorder bottom, do you recall what the specific event was that was your turning point where you surrendered?
You know, I had a couple years of, you know, literally binging and purging 5 or 6 or more times a day. I'd become very disconnected from my family, partly because of things that happened in my family and partly because of my eating disorder. And I was alone. I think I'd broken up with my boyfriend. I was shaking and throwing up blood. I was having nightmares that I was going to die. And I actually knew that it was either going to be change or die.
So what was the action that you took?
Well, the most amazing thing was I grew up in a very, very religious home. So when I really developed the eating disorder, I got very angry at the way I was brought up and very angry at God, so I refused to pray. So the specific action I took on that day was that I got on my knees and I asked for help. And I did this without having gone to program. It was just something that was instinctive to me. And I surrendered, and I realized that even though I couldn't believe maybe in the God of my parents, I needed help. And the really amazing thing that happened is that I ran into a woman that I had known 2 years before that who had been dying of anorexia. She was in a support group that I was in, and I had thought she was the sickest of the sick. I judged her and didn't think she'd make it. And I ran into her that day, and she was a changed person. She was a normal weight, but more than that, she looked the same. She didn't have that crazy look in her eye, and she was calm, and I told her I needed help, and she took me to a meeting. So that's how that worked.
I love hearing the story of how people become willing and ask for help. You know, if we don't ask for help, then we don't see the help when it's provided. You know, that's a cool story. Thanks for sharing that.
Your journey started at that point and continued, and more things were revealed to you. Tell us what happened.
Okay, I lived in Boston, and I was in a recovery group for about 4 years, and that was wonderful. It changed a lot of things for me, and I got a degree in singing and songwriting from Berklee College of Music, and I moved to Nashville, and I showed up here with a lot of hope and, you know, desire to take on the world. But what really happened was there was a lot of things from my childhood that I hadn't really resolved, and I had gone through the steps a couple times, mm-hmm. and but what I hadn't realized was that there were, for instance, things with my block, with a sense of God or a higher power left over from my childhood. And then there was a lot of abuse issues in my childhood that I hadn't really dealt with. The first way that I went through the steps was that I continued with that idea that I was bad, mm-hmm. you know, and I looked at all, quote, the harms that I'd done. Mm-hmm. And really, it's not that I haven't hurt people in my life, but in the scheme of harm, there were some things that were done to me that I really had to address. And those things were blocking me from what you call the sunlight of the spirit. And those were the things that eventually I needed to deal with. And I was not even conscious of them. So what happened was that when I got to Nashville, I started to have a lot of PTSD. And a lot of, for me, that meant tons of nightmares and tons of body memories and night terror. And I really was convinced I was being followed around by something dark. My house might be haunted. It was just craziness, and what it meant was I couldn't sleep. I started having trouble with my food again, and I was sitting in my kitchen in Nashville on Music Row, actually, and the song just poured out of me, and it was a song that told the story of what had happened to me, and it was like a 3-minute, it just flowed through. I haven't changed a word. And that song explained what was going on in my nightmares, explained what was going on with my body memories. And I ended up going to treatment for 5 weeks to a facility in Memphis. And the good news was that it helped me put the shame that I'd been carrying, so much shame and fear, like back where it belonged, which was on the people that caused that. But the bad news was that I kind of decided there was no God when I was there. It was not whether it was me or the facility, there was no support for spiritual, for finding a way to understand the trauma. Mm-hmm. And so when I got back to Nashville, I decided I was done. Done with my family, done with therapy, done with having, you know, I'd gone through so much stuff around that, and I just wanted to move on with my life, and done with God. Mm-hmm. I was very angry about all that I heard in treatment. And so what happened then was that I actually got into a band and met the man that became my ex-husband, and we had an amazing journey of traveling pretty much around the world and singing for 9 years together. But what really happened was that I made him my higher power. Mm-hmm. And he was just a human being and a flawed human being who had his own addiction. And I also became dependent on alcohol. Part of what I believe is that whether it's genetic, which it may be, or whether it's trauma-based, I have a lot of anxiety. And performing caused me a ton of anxiety, even though I love to do it. So I was performing in these 5-star hotels in Asia, singing like 4 hours a night, 5 or 6 nights a week, mm-hmm. and just to face the audience, I would, you know, have a drink or two. And I never drank in childhood. I didn't start drinking till I was 28, and within 9 years, I became an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. So I just really switched addictions. I went, you know, from the trouble I'd had with eating, where I, you know, surrendered and found kind of a sense of a higher power, and then I lost that, and I made a guy my higher power, and then I started drinking, and right. So.
Alcohol is a powerful support tool. I think it's real normal to turn to things that are socially acceptable, like alcohol, and we get to a point where there's an invisible line for those of us that are alcoholics, and we cross that line. And we don't know where that line's going to be in our drinking career. So you cross that line.
Yeah, and in the year 2000, I was in Japan singing for 6 months in Osaka with my ex-husband, and it came to light that he had a sex addiction. And he was also, I choose to think, an alcoholic, but I shouldn't really judge him on that. But and that was so shocking to me because I hadn't seen any of it. We lived in one hotel room and played music every night together. And I didn't see it. And I realized that from everything in my childhood and from my addictive behaviors that I had just, you know, I'd used alcohol. We drank together at night after the show. And I just didn't see.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really, there was my higher power, this guy. And I, you know, I found out that his behavior was so harmful to me, especially, you know, in Asia and
mm-hmm.
all that. So, and the health risks and the betrayal to me felt huge because of what I'd been through and he'd known about that. But I guess that was my second bottom. And I really I felt very alone in Japan, and I just asked for help again. Same thing.
So the God of your understanding was non-existent both times that you asked for help, that you were...
But I was willing to
willing.
Ask. Yeah. And whether that was from leftover in childhood and experiences with prayer that actually did work for me, or whether it was just a sense that, you know what, I don't know what's out there, but I am in this place where, you know, I simply mm-hmm. can't make it on my own, so I'm willing.
And then what happened?
Well, I knew that I'd had enough experience with addiction that I knew that I was an alcoholic, and I knew I needed to get help. So I traveled and found a group that I could go to, and I...
This is in Osaka?
This is in Osaka. I took the train 2 hours out to Kyoto, and there were four people there, and one little guy from Ireland who was willing to help me. So I was able to call him at night. I was still working in a bar, and I would call him every night. And I was working in a bar where my husband actually was bringing his girlfriend into the bar. So very painful and difficult situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed sober, which was a miracle. And then I got back. After 3 months, my contract was over. And then I went back to Los Angeles, where my mother lived, and kind of tried to make a go of it there. And then I realized I needed to change careers, and I wanted to go to therapy school, and I picked a school in Boulder to go to.
Wow. You have so much experience to share with your clients mm-hmm. and through your music. Mm-hmm. And that's so awesome. What a great journey.
Thanks. And I think the thing that was most amazing for me is now I can look, it's almost like I love to hike. That's my favorite thing in Boulder. And I love to go up the mountain and really see and be able to see far away and see where everything is. And I feel like as I go along this journey, I can look back and see how everything has kind of come together
mm-hmm.
to support my healing. And that I really needed to go to these various places to learn these things. And the thing that I learned in Japan was that I was able to forgive my mother. And that has been enormous. Due to all the incidents in my childhood, I really decided that I was never going to forgive my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And for not seeing and not protecting me and like not seeing what was going on under her own nose. And I had pretty much cut her off. And after that happened, I realized I had done the exact same thing. I was every bit as blind and disconnected and unable to see, and not with bad intention. I just didn't see, and so that helped me really forgive her mm-hmm. and be able to move on with that. And then in Boulder, the most amazing thing happened, which is that I moved near someone in my family who had abused me. And I started to have that fear again. Mm-hmm. All of it came back up. And I found a group of women who took me through the steps in a way that I could deal with that and to address the issues I never addressed. And the first one was the God issue. you know, and my sponsor sat me down and said, how are you going to get to a God of your understanding? So you get to write down how you came not to believe. And we went through every single thing, how all my reasons and all my justifications for that. And she was able to, you know, go, oh, this one belongs to a person. You know, and oh, that one belongs to maybe random forces of nature.
Mm-hmm.
And that one belongs to this. And I was able to find a higher power that could help me no matter how many horrible things that happen in this world. And that was huge. So that was the, you know, working through that major issue and finding a higher power I could really trust and believe in. And then she also helped me through the steps in a way where the harm was amended for me from the relationships with my father, my mother, my brother, and the abuse that happened. And that was amazing. I didn't know that that could be amended. And so that kind of the dark cloud that I'd lived in with my story that my life was worse or harder, or just I was more mm-hmm. damaged than other people, that lifted. And it lifted after I was able to do the amends with the support of other women. And two women actually came with me when I went to meet my brother. And that support was just amazing to me. So I was allowed to have relationships with these people that worked for me, when as a child it had only been what had worked for them and was very damaging to me.
I'm in awe of how much you've worked through and how courageous you are. And you know, they say it works if you work it, and you're a true example of someone who's worked it.
I think what I realized was that, you know, I had asked for help and asked for help and asked for help, and finally I was led to a place where I was willing. And that took a long time. And then where the, you know, I found some people who had similar experiences and were really able to show me the way through. And that was just amazing. I could never have done it on my own. And deeply grateful for that.
Earlier you mentioned that a song poured out of you.
Yeah, that song is called Fiction Is My Family. And it really told the story of what had happened before my conscious mind really was willing to accept it. And that is kind of the way music has always worked for me. It either gives me some truth or some insight, or is a little gift of encouragement. I feel like it's this channel between maybe God, my higher power, and me, or my soul. It's telling me a truth I didn't know before. And this was a big truth I didn't know before.
And we're going to close out our show in a minute or two with a cut from Robin's CD. And it's called Fiction Is My Family, the song that we're going to hear. Before we end, what would you like our listeners to know about your Recovery Music CD?
Each song on there was an inspiration or a gift. The first song is about compassion for self, which I feel like has been essential for recovery. And each song kind of chronicles my journey through the recovery path and a stage, something I learned, a step I took. And they were bits of hope and something to hold on to as I went along, and that is what I would like to give to anyone who cares to listen.
Well, it's a absolutely gorgeous CD, and Robin has a gorgeous voice, and we are thrilled that it's available at sunlightofthespirit.com, and we hope that you will visit, go to the artists tab and look for Robin Richardson and click on it, and you'll get samples of her music, and you can support your own recovery, and you could support Robin's recovery if you choose to buy the CD and share it with your friends. And thank you again for taking time to come talk to us and let us record a podcast.
Thanks so much for having me here, and thanks so much for creating this.
You're welcome.
Mama, what you feeling? I just can't see behind your life. Daddy's been stealing
into baby's room. Married to your maker, but who's seen through these lonely nights? Daddy found a better way to meet the needs you always knew. You always knew. Gonna tell the truth. Fiction is my family. Pictures don't tell half the story. Smiles that lie, but eyes can't hide the pain. They can't hide the pain. It's going crazy, crazy, crazy. Too much blame for one small heart. Sister up and moved away. Distance was her best escape. Mama, stop your preaching. Get God and a good book on your side. Turn the other cheek, she told me. It'll be alright, be alright. Who's gonna tell the truth? Who's gonna tell the truth? Yeah. Fiction is my family. Pictures don't tell half the story. Smiles that lie, but eyes can't hide the pain. No, they can't hide the pain.
Gonna tell the truth.